Welcome to Cybersecurity Insights, the podcast for the cybered.io learning community. Our goal is to bring cybersecurity practitioners the latest and most relevant education and training to upskill and dive deeper into topics that matter in today's modern cybersecurity world.
Good day, everyone. This is Steve King. I'm the managing director at cybered.io. And with me today for this podcast is Lodham Guy. Lodham is the VP of product at SciCode, is also a well-known security researcher and developer and been in the business for 15 years or so, and is a master at several different domains, including application security and cloud and endpoint security, and is an accomplished ethical hacker, has a master's in computational biology, and has contributed several innovative security solutions throughout his career, navigating the ever-changing and challenging landscape of cybersecurity. So welcome, Lodham. I'm delighted you could make it here today.
Thank you, Steve. I'm very happy to be here.
So let's start with the struggle, I'll call it, between the security management and the folks in development, which, it, depending upon who you talk to, most CISOs I know today feel that the DevSec and DevOps people are kind of own that space now more than ever, and so they feel like they're at the effect of those organizations. Has that been kind of your experience? So, one thing I know for sure is if you're trying to sell a product in there, it affects dev, if they don't buy in, you're not going to sell it, regardless of what the CISO wants to do. What are your thoughts about that?
I 100% agree. It's a challenge that we see specifically in the domain of application security or software supply chain security. And I think that poses a challenge to the CISO and the security teams because they are used to own security for their organization. And they know that they're accountable for that, but also responsible for their security, which gives them a lot of power to solve any problem that they see. But specifically in application security, even though they're accountable for the security of the application and and the entire development life cycle, they are limited in their ability to actually resolve the problems by themselves, the security team. They have to work closer together with the development team, and that's a challenge for both sides.
That's well said, I think. The open source issue, in my mind, and the dangers that lurk in all of our repos today have reached a level of concern that I'm not sure what we're going to do about. But, you know, the combination of hidden, unknown APIs that hidden malware in open source code present a real challenge, I think. Is that your experience?
Open source is a challenge, and kind of the reason the challenge is increasing is because developers are using more and more open source code, and the reason they're using more and more open source code is because they want to move fast. They don't need to code something that someone else already did for some other project. They can just use it. And in the last few years, we see this increase in using open source code for or aligned with the increase in the speed of development and the speed of deployment. And that does create a challenge because engineering team becoming much more efficient and much faster, and security teams need to keep up. And as a challenge, like in the old days, security teams had time. A development lifecycle could take months for a new version to be released. Maybe during the QA process, it was wise to add some security testing to make sure that code is not vulnerable, the application does not pose any risk. But now security teams just don't have this time.
Yeah, but that pressure is coming from the sort of insane pressure to get to digitalization, right? I mean, we're, you know, I know companies that have, you know, they're pushing 40 or 50 a day. And I don't know, I don't even know how you do that, you know? And with the dangers of, you know, transitive dependencies downstream of whatever it is that you have visibility into, we don't have any visibility as to what this code depends upon that we just included in our production code. Does that doesn't make sense to me. I don't know why don't we stand up and say, hey, guess what? You know, we're not going to do this anymore.
So we can try, but as security expert, we will 100% fail because we have to realize that security is a risk to the organization, but the organization needs to be successful first, so the risk will mean anything, right? And if the security is a blocker for development, then there's a problem that you really, really have to solve. So security needs to start thinking like developers, and developers are measured on the speed and quality of their product. Security is one aspect of that. But if we're going to force teams not to deploy 40 times a day, then we're hurting the productivity of the entire company, and that's a problem.
Well, you know, it may be a problem. I think my question is, I mean, has anybody ever talked to anybody? You know, these things have a way of sort of institutionalizing themselves, right? I mean, I've been, you know, we've all been around for a long time, and you get into these organizations, and 2 years later, you're grinding away at something, and you realize that you've never had a conversation with anybody about why you're doing what you're doing. You're just doing it because that's kind of the way we've always done it, you know? And then it all always becomes a slippery slope, right? So you start out with whatever it is, 10, and you end up, and then 2 years later, you're 30 a day, and, you know, and the hits just keep on coming, right? And nobody talks to anybody about anything. So I'm not sure that, you know, anybody considers this a real threat or a real problem.
Yeah, I think, well, people do talk, there are conversations, but there's a real challenge here. Because, as you said, you integrate with open source code. So you're bringing in risks that are out of your reach, basically. You're continuously integrating, continuously deploying, and it happens multiple times a day. And there are other reasons for the attack landscape to exceed. Open source is one of them, but we're using more and more tools for development and more tools to allow us this continuous integration, continuous deployment, and the fast speed of development. So the attack landscape is increasing. Usually security teams are not growing that pace from manpower perspective. So they have to use new technology to secure the code, the process, and applications.
Yeah, and then don't you feel like the repos are far more vulnerable and far more targeted these days by the bad guys too?
Yes, definitely. So I mentioned why the attack landscape is increasing, but I think there's also a change in the point of view of the attackers. The malicious actors, that they see the potential in penetrating to the development lifecycle. You know, SolarWinds, that's maybe the biggest international software supply chain attack, and there are many more examples where attackers were able to get into software development lifecycle to change the application and then hurt not just their target for the attack, but all their customers. That's why I call that the supply chain. From one vendor, you can get to their thousands of customers and get access to many organizations. So that's the risk is definitely increased in the last few years.
Yeah, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole very far, but you've been in the business a while. Do you feel like, you know, we keep approaching detection and response from a network-centric kind of point of view, and that always ends up with a response that's far too right of bang. And you know, I think you could look at that and over the last 10 years and say, you know, guess what? This isn't working. We need to change the way we approach this. Is that your headset? And is that ring true for you or no?
Yeah, no, 100%. We actually asked our customers and a very large group of CISO. We saw that over 70% of them agree that today's attack surface is completely unmanaged. And it's over 70%. So we're surprised with those numbers because they're high, but we know that this is a concrete problem.
Yeah, and lots of tools too, right?
So they feel that the attack surface is unmanaged, so they need security tools to solve that. But the attack surface is increasing, so they're adding more and more tools. And now you have two problems. You still feel that it's unmanaged, but now you do have the solution, but you have a new problem, which is to manage all those tools together, which is hard, especially because we said that the teams themselves are not growing in their manpower.
Yeah, right. So I think we've done a fairly good job of describing a big chunk anyway, not all of the problem here. What is the Psycode solution and why? And, you know, this isn't about selling your product here, but you do have a product that plays in the space. And I'd like you to help our listeners understand why your approach makes sense.
Yes, of course. So obviously, I'm not going to speak about features and functionality of the product because I don't think that's interesting for this audience. But I do want to speak about our mind of thinking and how we see the problem and how we see the solution. So we all come from a background of developers. We know a lot about security, but we also were developers ourselves, or some of us still are. And we know about these processes, and we know about the pains of the developers. So the concept of shift left is something that we discussed a lot. And the idea here is that development teams, with all those tools, with the fast of development, they're taking more and more responsibility for themselves. And the concept of shift left means shifting left the security, meaning that we want to give the developer teams that are getting more and more responsibility for security as well. And the idea is great, but we saw that the implementation is just not working. So one reason is that developers, they experience too much vulnerabilities, too much alert. They have a huge alert. 81% of the teams that we ask said that that's a main problem for them. And that creates two problems. One, they need to invest a lot of time in that. And second, they lose trust because a lot of those alerts are not real or at least not that important. So what we're talking about is more of a controlled shift left approach. The understanding of this is, we call it the AppSec is a team sport. You don't do it alone. It's a team. You have the application security team, you have the developer teams, you have the DevOps teams, and we all need to work together.
Right. How much of a role does AI play in your product today, if any?
Yeah, so AI is, let me separate the two types of AI. There's the AI machine learning that we used to know until a little bit over a year ago, and there's the generative AI that we all came to know with ChatGPT over the last 13, 14 months. So both are relevant, and more classic machine learning AI is used in a lot of tools for detection. But the generative AI solution comes with the promise of doing more than just more sophisticated algorithms to detect security vulnerabilities. Because now that's what we do in Psycode. We have a new helper in the system. So detection is always a challenge. The first thing every security solution will create is alerts that alert on security issues. But the challenge for the customers is on the remediation process. They need to fix everything. So now if we're using generative AI to both automate the remediation process and also help in the triage and remediation process by giving suggestion, by giving better explanation and more dedicated explanation and suggestion for the specific findings that we have.
Can you explain, I think you have like a one-click ASPM application security posture management solution that is kind of your go-to-market. Can you explain how that works? We don't need to, you know, be at the 1,000-foot level, but...
Yeah, no. The concept of ASP, I think there were a lot of vendors in the application security domain and tried to do a lot of different things. And basically, there are really, as we said, a lot of different problems in the securing the development lifecycle. Steve, you mentioned the open source code that we're using, and that's the problem. It's a different problem than the use of our own proprietary code that might have vulnerabilities as well, and a little bit different than the vulnerabilities we might have in the SDLC tools that we're using. So, and there are many more problems, and a lot of different companies created point solutions to solve each one of those problems separately. And the concept of ASPM, which stands for Application Security Posture Management, is to manage your entire application security program in one place. And I think at Cycode, we really have an interesting strategy for that, because we're saying, well, we have a system, a platform that can really help in this process, in this collaborative process between security and development team. We give a lot of control for the security team and a lot of control for them to help shift left the organization. And we have this platform available for all those different tools, including tools from other vendors that can just integrate to our platform. So from our customer's perspective, suddenly all the, again, in this questionnaire that we did, we realized that there were more than 40 tools that they're using on average. So managing 40 tools is a challenge, but managing 40 capabilities, usually it's much less than that because you have duplicates, but managing all of those in one single platform, one pane of glass, makes the process much easier. So that's the concept of ASPM, with having everything managed together, seeing all the process, what we call from code to cloud, all the way from coding your application to building it, to delivering it to the cloud and to your production environment.
Do you aggregate all of those other tools onto your platform, or can the customer do that? How does that work?
Yeah, we offer those integrations. So we offer the Cycode security solutions, but we also allow customers to use the security solution that they're already using, integrating them with a single click of a button to our platform, and then manage everything from there.
Through APIs, I assume, right?
No, we are using the APIs of the tools for the integration, but from our customer's perspective, it's, you know, it's just one click and we're doing all the hard work on the back end.
Yeah. So some of the problems that we've discussed, and we go back to those, for example, the relationship between security and developers is a problem, and that your product is not going to solve that problem. How do we solve that problem? And repos also, right, that are not under your control. How do we solve that problem with the incredible vulnerabilities that are, you know, inherent in those repositories?
Yeah, so what we see is that the accountability for application security is on the security team. But as I said, the people that can actually solve the problems or the issues are the development team. And when we're able to solve this collaboration problem, then we see success. And we do. So from our perspective, from the Cycode perspective, the security team has full control on the Cycode platform. They can configure that as much as they want. They can end their own policy. They can modify our policy. They have a lot of policies out of the box. But the developer continue to work on their own tools, and we integrate with those tools. So they'll continue to code in their IDE, but instead of only seeing like code bugs marked in red, they'll also see security bugs marked in red and be able to fix them before they push their code. So much before and real security issue arise. And if the security team wants to ask the developer to do something, then they open a ticket because that's how developers work. So by giving this option to stay in the tools that you know and love for the developers, but have the full control, responsibility, and accountability for the security team, we really bridge this gap, and we see a lot of success within our customers.
Okay, that might make sense. I mean, you know, if I'm a, I can see that, I mean, if I'm a CISO and we're suddenly doing this, I can see why I would feel better about what.
If I may, I want to tell you a secret. And again, back to my bad days as a developer, developers really want their code to be secure. They want it to be good. They wanted the outcome to look nice. They wanted to have no bugs and no security vulnerabilities. If you give them the option and the ability to own this, they will. They will.
I'm sure that's true. I came up as a developer too, so I have the same background. So, you know, with, yes, there's a lot of pride in there. Back to the repository issue, though, one of the solutions that folks are offering in the GPT space for LLMs is kind of a private LLM, right? That's based upon some public model, but then it add your own data to it, and it's not in the public domain, so it's only available to you. Is there a similar solution for repositories that could work? So if, you know, company X didn't want to use a public repository, you know, could they create their own or buy a seed license that is their own instantiation, their own instance of a GitHub or something that they could run and or cleanse and then run and have confidence that it's not corrupt? Or do you have another solution?
Yeah, absolutely. Companies that develop their own software, that they keep everything private. With the source code management tools, they can define the repository as private. No one will have access to them. If they have a regulatory constraints, they can host code management software in-house in their own servers. So the code is safe. When they're using open source, then they can create a copy of it and use that copy, so they know no one will have access to that. But usually you want to get those updates, so still have this risk of getting something bad when you update that open source.
Yeah,
from a privacy perspective, yeah, you have a solution, but it's not a full solution for the security issues.
Yeah. And I guess that's where my issue is we kind of keep promulgating the problem and not actually solving it. So, but there's a lot of that going on. What is what's your outlook going forward here? Do you think we're making progress? Are you optimistic about our ability to, as a, if you just picked any business, you know, this is JP Morgan, as secure against current threats as they could be? Yeah, and that JP Morgan, I'm just picking, you know, just grabbing a name out of a hat, but any company, I mean, do you think that we're making progress or no?
I think we do. You know, securing a company, especially a large enterprise organization, is a huge challenge. And no one is, you know, can say that 100% no security incident will ever happen. We know that's impossible to say. But we do see a lot of progress. And I'll talk about two angles of that. One is the open source community, and the other is the government. So for the open source community, so far we said only bad things. You know, companies using open source, maybe there are security vulnerabilities, but actually the open source community is really, really advanced on security. So there are a lot of open source projects to solve some of the most challenging security problems. So for example, the content that's where this all relates to the government as well, because the government came up with a lot of instructions and compliance frameworks that are maybe mandatory for some, but a good advice for others as well. And if we can take as an example the SBOM, the Software Bill of Materials, which instruct companies to define exactly what their software is built from. And in order to sell to the government, you have to create this software bill of material so everyone, customers at least, can see what ingredients you're using for your product, which means that they can see if you have any security vulnerabilities, and they will, which force you to solve them before they even check. Right, so those controls, those framework are really helping improving the security level of applications today. So I really believe that that we are improving and we do have the ability to do that.
Yeah, you know, and I agree the SBOM is a good idea. Certainly, tells us everything we need to know about source. But if you look at the SolarWinds attack, for example, that was malware inserted at compile time, right? So your, you know, SBOM wouldn't have done anybody any good there, right? So that's kind of, you know, I don't think it's a panacea. I think it's helpful, and companies, you know, should be part of basic hygiene, which, you know, in my estimation, we just don't do enough of anyway, which is actually the biggest problem I think that we have in cybersecurity. But
that's right. But those things are improving to that. So you're right. So, SBOM is good, but not everything and not enough. But if you look at the Security Software Development Framework, the SSDF, which is kind of an expansion of the concept of SBOM. SBOM talks about your code, but SSDF now talks about the processes, the tools, the configuration, and everything in the development lifecycle. So same idea of having an SBOM file, you can have a provenance file or provenance document that describes exactly the way, not only what ingredients your software is using, but all the tools and processes that you implemented to create that software. And how this forces you to do that in a secure way, overall improving the security of the product. So just as an example, we see this move, we see this improvement. That's why I'm very optimistic. But honestly, yeah, there's still a lot of steps to take.
Yeah. So I'm conscious of the time, Logan, and we're a little bit over. So I have one last question. If, let's say the board of Company X calls Lodum Guy in and says, hey, we're willing to do and we're willing to spend whatever we need to do and spend in order to solve our cybersecurity vulnerabilities and our exposures and to truly get our posture management up to a place that's impenetrable by, you know, 98% of attack vectors. What would your answer be?
No, my answer is, first, it's possible. It is about investment. It's it will take time and money and training the right people to do this job, because it is a unique job. But it's definitely possible. We have the solutions. We have the processes. It's an investment that every organization needs to have, especially the larger one with a larger risk. But we have the solution, Cycle, but not just Cycle, but I think the community itself. It is possible. You do need to understand what you're doing, so do it in the right way, and also understand that it's not a one-time thing. Like you can have a more significant investment to get you to the right place, but then there's an ongoing investment because things are changing all the time.
Do you think that board level oversight understands that?
Yes, of course, not to the details, but yeah, definitely. The board level accountability for security is something that is much more common now than it was a few years ago. Sit at the tables that a CISO has today and the executive management of the company and at the chair and
and resources as well that are being invested in security is definitely on the rise, but definitely in a better place than it used to be.
Well, it's great to hear. I appreciate that. It feels so much better now. And your confidence and your positive optimism is inspirational. And I do appreciate your perspective and view as a person who's, in the trenches every day. So I'm happy to hear that all. So listen, thank you for taking the time here. Ludum, it was entertaining and instructional, I think, and hopefully our audience got benefit out of this as well. And I'd love to do this again in a few months and kind of see where SciCode is and what progress we've made.
Perfect, Steve. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you, and thanks to our audience for spending 30 minutes with us again. And hopefully, it was valuable to you. And until next time, this is Steve King, your host, signing off.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cybersecurity Insights. You can connect with us on LinkedIn or Facebook, or send us an email at social@cybered.io. For more information about the podcast, visit cybered.io/podcast. Until next week, stay safe and secure, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cybersecurity Insights.